Welcome to another episode of the TV Insider Podcast. In this episode, I ventured to the great state of Texas to spend time at the Austin TV Festival, where television has been celebrated for the past 8 years, or seasons, as the festival likes to say. I'm Jim Halterman, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine, and I was happy to be a part of the festival, which included moderating a few panels, as well as sitting down with some TV favorites, including Grown-ish star Yara Shahidi, Brooklyn Nine-Nine's Melissa Fumero, and recipient of the festival's award in television excellence, Felicia Rashad. I sat down with Rashad in the midst of the busy festival, apologies for the background noise, but we talked whether she feels like an icon and her role in the upcoming OWN series, David Makes Man, which premieres August 14th. Let's see what she had to say. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
You're getting an award.
Yeah.
When you hear the word icon, do you feel like you're an icon? Because that's a word that gets thrown around, but I've heard it referenced in your name.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's... Thank you. That's what I can say. Thank you.
But what does the award mean to you as far as, you know, it's for your whole body of work, and a lot of it's television, this being a TV festival, but you've also done so much everywhere.
And it's coming out of Texas, which is home. And that means an awful lot.
Yeah.
That means a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were just getting started in the business, was this always the plan that you'd kind of take TV, film, theater, acting, wherever you could? Was that always the plan?
What the plan was to work wherever there was good work to be done.
Yeah.
When you're a theater major, at least when I was a theater major, this was the longing. Yeah. The longing was, when I graduate, that there be work for me to do, good work for me to do. Mm-hmm. And I was a theater major.
Yeah.
So I started in theater. I looked to the theater, and I worked in theater for many years and continue to do so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing.
I love it.
But, you know, I'm sure you get a lot of roles sent your way. What does a role need to have for you to say yes?
Well, let's see. One would hope for a little depth. At least a little depth. But you know, I get offered roles with a good deal of depth.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm happy about that. I want to see what the story is about, and I want to know what's at the heart of that character.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to know.
Okay.
And they don't all have to be great, shining people, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But they should be people.
Yeah.
Real people.
And I think sometimes people still have this Claire Huxtable sense in their head, but then they see you do something that's totally opposite, which you've done many times. And it's fierce, and it's exciting to watch as a viewer. I'm guessing it's exciting for you to watch as an actor.
It's exciting to do.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Does anything scare you anymore? Like, if you read something, you're kind of scared of doing this, but obviously you have to do it. But does anything scare you as far as that?
Everything scares you. Every single thing is like, ooh. Oh my goodness, oh, okay, let's try it, let's go.
Yeah.
It's adventure, it's all adventure. Last time I cried, it's been a long time I cried about something. When I was on my way to Los Angeles to perform in August Wilson's Gem of the Ocean, that character, Aunt Esther, 287 years old, I was reading the script on the plane and burst into tears. And I thought, what have I gotten myself into?
But then how did it go?
It went so well.
Yeah.
It went so well. What I love most about the work that I do is what I learn with every single role.
Yeah.
There's something to be learned all the time.
What are you learning from David Makes Man as far as your character in that project? I've seen the first episode. I have a couple more to watch, but mm-hmm. Powerful stuff.
Very powerful stuff.
But as far as the show itself and your character, what have you learned working on this project?
Okay, so... Every role except for one that I can recall is patterned after someone that I've known. I have known Dr. Woods Trapp in the forms of my high school English teacher and a dear friend who was the head of the Department of English at Howard University and also taught in the drama department.
Okay.
So I understand this woman. We don't get a lot of, we don't get any of her backstory in this book, and that's fine.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that since I've only seen the one. I didn't know if we saw more of that or just
You'll hear her refer to research in the summer. Well, I know what that means to me because of the teachers that I grew up with. They were in school every summer. They were always studying. Yeah, so I understand. You see, this is what I mean. I learned something. I learned what I know and didn't know I knew.
Yeah.
That's something. You know, with every role there is something, and it might be something slight and small. Maybe not a big aha moment. And then to move into levels of that understanding, because you can't play it, you have to embody it.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And the David character, you know, we get to see a lot of his life. And I know from my younger days, you know, teachers impact you in very specific ways.
Yes, they do.
And I feel like that's why this character is in the show. Does that develop more?
That's
as well?
Why she's there.
Yeah.
She's there. She's interesting in that she watches from different perspectives. Not just him, but all the students.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes to think that she doesn't miss anything, but we all miss something.
Yeah. That's true. And in the first episode, when your character asked the class, how did I get here, and what is my story? I was thinking, like, one, it made me think immediately about my own journey. And then I was thinking, well, you're also getting this nice award that's kind of for your journey.
Yes. How did I get here? Well, I started out in Houston, Texas.
Not far from here in Austin.
I started out in Houston, Texas. I started out in a family that wanted all its children. And it was a good family. I can say that.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you had a good start.
I had a good start.
Because that sets everything up.
And I had a good start in schools.
Yeah.
Because I was with teachers who were in the classroom because they wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And I had a community of friends from first grade or kindergarten all through high school.
Yeah.
And new friends along the way. Great activities. And somewhere in there, when I was 13 years old, my mother decided, artist that she is, well, enough of this. We're moving to Mexico City. This was right before my eighth grade year. I was 13 years old. I had plans. There was a football season coming up. There was pep rallies and things to go to. And we're moving to Mexico City? I don't think so. You know, that was an adventure in itself.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That was a great influence. That was a real turning point in life. And then from there, you know, finishing school and on to Howard University. Another turning point. 4 incredible years with the most amazing professors.
Yeah.
And then to New York.
There you go.
living at the YWCA for 1 year.
Did you? Yes, I did.
When I was taking jobs as a temporary typist. See, I'm dating myself. People were using electric typewriters back then. Yes, I did.
You had to have strong fingers because I learned on a regular typewriter.
I did too.
I'm old enough to remember that. And I remember you had to really, and you did it.
And you got good at it. And my mother taught me how to do that when I was 7. And my mother taught me how to type on blind keys. Yes, sir.
That's serious.
It was, yes.
I know you, that's hard.
Yes, but she taught me. So I had that skill from the time that I was little. You wonder how you get to where you get to.
Yeah.
That was something that I had from the time I was very young.
Isn't that funny?
That's awesome. And then auditioning for things whenever I could because I didn't have an agent for many years in my career. I did not have an agent. I got all the way to the Wiz without an agent.
Really? That's great.
Yeah. Just meeting people and hearing about auditions and showing up.
Yeah, showing up's big.
And then, you know, when people get to see your work, then they ask you to come and audition. You do that.
Yeah.
Many years before I had an agent.
That's awesome. The journey, that sounds amazing. What's next on, do you have a bucket list? Like what's next on, what's something you have not done yet that you're dying to do? Is it a short list? Is it a long list?
Oh, there's a script that I've been working on for some time now and it's time to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
That is based on a book that I've optioned some 9 years ago. I've optioned it for the past 9 years. And I've been developing this script over time because it takes time to develop.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see that realized.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the bucket list.
Next up, in a much quieter setting, I talked with Brooklyn Nine-Nine star Melissa Fumero, who was not only there to talk about the show, but also to moderate a panel devoted to the canceled Netflix comedy One Day at a Time. Fingers crossed it's not canceled forever. Fumero also talked about her beginnings in the business and what her hopes are for the upcoming 7th season of NBC's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Let's see what she had to say.
So we're here with Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But you're here actually on a task. You're moderating something, which is usually my job, but you do a very good job, I know. But talk about what you're doing.
We'll see. This is my first time.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, I was asked to moderate the One Day at a Time panel, which I'm very excited about because I love everyone on that show and I'm still rooting for them so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to hang out with them this afternoon and ask them some questions and... I think these things always go well when it's also just like a fun chat.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And since I'm friends with everyone on that show.
Well, you were on the season 3 premiere.
Yes.
You and Stephanie both, which was hilarious to see both of you there.
Thank you.
And of course, my question when I talked to the producer, I was like, are they coming back? You know, that was before we knew what the future of the show was, but I was like, I mean, one, because you're your family, so you're part of the, hopefully...
I mean, it might be one of my questions during the panel.
I think it should be. But I mean, think about a year ago with Brooklyn Nine-Nine and, you know, and it's still around, it's thriving, we're getting another season, so shows don't have to go away.
Yeah, and that one is such a, you know, it's not really another comedy that's doing what One Day at a Time is, just culturally and for representation, and so I hope it finds another home because it deserves at least a few more seasons. They still have a lot of stories to tell. Yeah.
Okay. So I know what my moderator prep is always like when I'm doing a panel. What's your prep? Have you prepped things?
I prepped questions and I looked at them a lot this morning so that I hopefully don't have to refer to my paper like a dork. But I probably will refer to my paper. And Yeah, and then just also tried to keep it chill this morning. Mm-hmm. Reminded myself that, like, I'm allowed to think of a question in the moment.
Totally.
And
those are usually the best ones.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of come out of the conversation, because as you're listening, you're like, oh, let me ask about this. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and just, I don't know. I'm like nervous and excited, but
you'll do well.
It's also not about me; it's about them. So
yeah.
That takes some of the pressure off.
Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right things.
Okay, good.
Because like when I sit in panels and I see moderators doing the wrong things, that's where I'm like, okay, this isn't about you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because some moderators spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about their reaction to stuff. I'm like, no, we don't care about you. We want to hear.
We're here for this cast.
The producers, the cast, all that stuff. So,
yeah.
So wait, so what else are you doing? Because you're on hiatus now.
Mm-hmm.
But probably not. I mean, you guys probably start up fairly soon, right?
We do in like 5 weeks or so.
Okay.
So I've got a little family vacation coming up, which will be really nice. I did an episode of Room 104.
Oh, nice.
But that won't be out for a while because they're like way ahead in their mm-hmm. shooting schedule.
Okay.
And... that's about. I'm going to do Match Game next week.
That'll be fun.
And yeah, it's been like just kind of a chill hiatus. Like the schedule with Brooklyn can be kind of nutty, so mm-hmm. it's nice to get to spend some extra time with our son and David, and we both had a busy year, so it's nice to kind of slow down, have some downtime. Yeah.
Now, I was looking at your IMDb credits because I was just curious, like, what some of those early jobs were. And
yeah.
And even, like, you know, when you're just breaking into the business, you have an idea what you would love your career to be. But is this kind of what you were envisioning as far as just, I mean, outside of employment, but like,
yeah.
what you're actually doing?
Yeah, I know. Those early credits, they're all over the place. I hear what you're putting down.
Like the Mentalist, all my children. It was all my children on One Life to Live, of
course. Yeah, One Life to Live, The Mentalist. Yeah. Important things with Dimitri Martin. Like,
but you're trying to work. So you're not going to say no to that stuff because it's employment.
Yeah, a lot of it was just trying to work, keep my health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I left the soap opera telling my manager, I want to do comedy. Like, I want to go back to comedy. I just spent 4.5 years crying almost every day. I just want to go do some silly fun stuff and make people laugh. And then I kept getting close to stuff, and like a few hits here and there. And then when I got to LA, but then like some cool dramas came back and I was like, oh no, I really love drama. I think even for me, I flip-flopped. Like I changed my mind all the time. Anytime I did a drama job, I was like, I want to go do comedy. And anytime I did a comedy, I was like, I think I really should do something kind of serious. Like, so I was very back and forth with it. But then when I got to LA, I kept getting really close to comedy jobs and, but not booking them. So then I did a session at Groundlings and I did a comedy class, and then I just like spent some time kind of like, well, let me like hone this thing and figure out what exactly is my wheelhouse. And I think that helped a lot, especially when the audition for Brooklyn came around.
Yeah. Which do you think is harder? Because a lot of people say comedy is the hardest thing ever, but then drama's hard and soap work is hard, I know, because you're just cranking through material. But
yeah.
Of the two genres, is there one you think is harder than the other?
I think they're hard in different ways. Mm-hmm. I think... comedy is harder to learn or teach. I think you either have some of it in your bones and in your soul, or you don't. And there's only so much you can kind of, you know, techniques or tricks or patterns that you could, I don't know, you know, it's a little bit more instinctive. Whereas drama, I think you can get to those places, you can find a technique that works for you. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, like, this all has to start with some basic level of talent.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of cheesy. I used to say that drama was my home and comedy was where I went to go vacation. And it still kind of feels like that, you know? Like, I know if it's drama, like, I have, like, all the steps and I know what I want to do and how to approach it. And then with comedy, I've started to feel like that, but I still, most of the time, like, I don't know. Here's 10 versions. Like, maybe this is funny. Whatever you think is funniest, like, we'll just figure it out. You know, it's a lot more like playing and exploring. Yeah. And so, yeah, which for like a day-to-day, I love being on a comedy show for that reason.
Yeah, well, because that's the thing. You're working with so many different kinds of funny people. Like, Andy's a certain kind of funny. Andre's certainly a certain different kind of funny because he's such the, like the straight man, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing you're even like learning from them because you're seeing what they're doing and what they bring that might be something that you hadn't thought of or that you didn't think you could do. And then boom, you're doing it.
I feel like I've gone to this really elite comedy school for 6 years and it's been amazing. Yeah. And I've learned so, I mean, I think I'm biased, but I think we have one of the best casts in all of television.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much from my castmates.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that the show has succeeded in, not just staying on the air, because thank God for NBC picking you guys up.
Yeah.
But also the Jake and Amy relationship, which I know you guys were asked about endlessly in the beginning, like, when are they going to get together? What's happening?
Right.
And then when they actually put them together, like, it could really screw up a show. We've seen it happen.
Yeah.
And it didn't. It didn't. And mm-hmm. you guys getting married didn't hurt it. And it's like, it's just worked. Why do you think that is?
I think Dan Gore and the writers very smartly stayed away from any just sort of traps and tropes. And they, I think Dan also was like, why can't a couple just be together and happy? And we can find conflict. Every relationship has conflict. Mm-hmm. We don't have to like create or pull out from thin air like this conflict or will they, won't they? Like, that's not real life. And I actually find that some of my favorite Jake and Amy stuff has been since they got married.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just that family aspect now. Like, you know, I don't know that Jake would have yelled at Amy's mother the way he did in the Lin-Manuel episode. But now he's family. Now he's her husband. And, he might not have done that as a boyfriend or even fiance. So it's kind of like more fun. It feels like there's even more to kind of mine.
Yeah. And that episode in particular, if he hadn't stepped up, it probably would have felt false.
Because
like, he's not just going to sit back and let anybody and talk to his wife that way.
Yes, exactly. And but if they were just boyfriend and girlfriend, you'd be like, maybe he doesn't want to overstep. It's her family. Like, there's cool new like essences and colors now that they're married, which is fun.
So now going into season 7, I'm so glad there's a season 7.
Me too.
Awesome. What would be your hope? Because they've done so much with Amy, but do you still have kind of things you would like to do for that character or see happen to that character?
Yeah, I feel like there's been a little bit of groundwork laid this past season. If you kind of go back, you know, Jake and Amy have talked about kids.
Mm-hmm.
Amy is progressing up the ladder at work. I think those are two areas that would be fun to explore in like future seasons, is like how high up the ladder are we going to see Amy go before the show ends?
Yeah.
And will or won't she become a mother at that? And how will those two things affect each other too?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, she's even a higher rank than Jake, and will that play into their relationship ever if she just like her rank just keeps getting like higher and higher than his?
Yeah.
And so I think it will. And then of course, you know, with the cliffhanger, Holt is a beat cop, so Amy might be his boss, kind of.
That'd be amazing.
I don't know, but like, I'm like, well, she's the sergeant of the beat cops, like, so.
But what a fun reversal, because we've seen her just in awe of him and trying to impress him for 6 seasons.
There's so many ways it could go. There's so many ways it could go. And I'm really excited. I'm not even going to try to guess how she will handle that and just leave it up to the writers, because whatever they come up with will be like the best version of it.
Okay.
But yeah, I think we're in that kind of juicy point in our run where we know these characters so well and we've already peeled back some layers. And now we can just, you know, it's like you don't have to set anything up.
Yeah.
You can just like really dive into these people and their personalities and their quirks. And I feel like we did that this past season. Like we got into like some of Amy's crazy, and we saw Amy vulnerable for the first time.
Yeah.
And so hopefully more of that.
I love it. I know the story might be done, but I would love to see your husband come back on the show, because it was fun to see him there, because he's really like the drama guy, being on Power and all these heavy shows where sometimes he's a bad guy, but just
sometimes,
you know, or a good guy with bad, you know, things. But like Power, like it was such a dark, serious role.
Yeah.
But it was fun to see him kind of play with you guys a little bit. So I was like, maybe he wants to do comedy. I don't know that that's even what he wants to be doing, but it'd be fun to see him back.
He's a little scared of comedy, but which is hilarious to me because he's so funny and he makes me laugh at home all the time. And he's made my castmates laugh, and everyone just goes, you're nervous? You're so funny. But yeah, he also loves like his drama stuff. That's and fun. Yeah. All but right. Yeah, it'd be fun to have him back.
Okay. Well, good luck moderating. Break a leg.
Thanks.
You'll do great.
Thank you.
No doubts. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Finally, having been a longtime fan of ABC's Black-ish, I recently caught up on the Freeform spinoff Grown-ish, which features daughter Zoe, played by Yara Shahidi, off at college. The show's in the middle of a really solid second season and airs Wednesday nights on Freeform. Here's my chat at the festival with Yara Shahidi.
We're here talking to Yara Shahidi.
Hello.
Hello. Talking about Grown-ish, I was just catching up online, and I caught up at a really good time because these episodes that are airing right now...
Contentious.
Oh, my God. When you first read the script to see... I mean, because one, I thought it was just going to be a party episode where she keeps partying all night.
Right.
But then it has some real consequences.
Right.
When you first read the script, what did you think? Because that's a big thing for your character to go through and all of that.
But, well, what I appreciate about Zoe's journey is that she's a character who genuinely believes that she's infallible, and through each and every episode you realize that she isn't, and she realizes that she isn't.
Yeah.
And I think this season in particular has made her realize that she has to have her own backup plan. And I think where before she could rely on her parents, she could rely on everything just kind of working in her favor because she was that person who always had her life together. She actually has to think about the repercussions of her actions, and she's now at an age in which those repercussions actually really matter. And so I appreciated that balance because I think this party episode that leads into the cheating actually reminded me or was reminiscent of the Adderall episodes in season one, in that this is something that you would never expect this character to do, and this is something this character never expected she would do. And so I appreciate what it means to just be thrown into a completely unseemly situation and everything that comes out of that.
I know. And I think that's why the show works, because it's real life. And even somebody like me who's way past college age, but I can relate to that. Because we've all done things that later on you look back, you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? But then you see the steps leading up to, and it's kind of like, well, it's just kind of where it went.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But this is going to have repercussions for, I'm guessing, a long time in a lot of ways.
Right, because after the cheating episodes, I think I'll say this because these episodes are already out, but this is when Zoe gets cut off because her parents find out that she's cheating. And then that's a huge shift in her life. This is when last week the audience found out and Zoe found out that her roommate, best friend, and her first love interest have been in a fling. And so a lot happens once she cheats, because this entire day becomes chaotic. And so it really does make her re-examine the relationships that she's in.
Yeah.
But I also love that it's the first time in which you see her out of the comfort of her socioeconomic class, because I feel like that's been an unspoken kind of factor of her character.
Yeah.
Like, when you think of her, not even resilience, but her ability to rebound, there's that kind of unspoken ability to say, the reason I have new clothes every week, the reason I have this internship, the reason I have da-da-da-da-da. And, of course, I'm not denying that she's never been hardworking, and I think there are plenty of times in which we've seen that she's absolutely driven, but I think this will take it to another level.
Wow. Okay. And you've been playing Zoe a long time.
Almost 6 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because one, I think most actors, unless you're on a series, like, you might play a character for a movie where you're, in the body for a month or two or however long it is. Do you ever go back and look at those early episodes? Because they show sometime now since syndication, so I come across them. And it's usually the twins that I'm like, look how little they are.
I know, right? I mean, what's funny is Marseille and Miles are now the age Marcus and I were when we started the show, which is surreal to me.
Yeah.
But I do go back and watch. I think my family goes back and watches all the time. But it's amazing to see everyone's evolution. I also love how Grown-ish we've been able to flourish the character of Zoe, because I appreciate that in the family dynamic she always has her life together. She's the one overly confident person with extreme bravado, but she's also the comedic assist, and so I think it's interesting to be in a show in which she falls out of just the assist, and I think as an actress that was fun to play, to find those moments in which there are episodes in which the comedy is completely situational and you're laughing at Zoe, and there's there's moments in which I get to fully embrace how odd she is as a character. And I also love the fact that, like, on Grown-ish, the one thing that I feel like a lot of the audience members are running into, which has been really funny to observe, is just that Zoe isn't always going to be likable. And I really appreciate that, because I think it's more authentic. And I think this idea that you can invest in her anyway is really important, because there aren't those moments, especially when you're going through what she's going through, in which you are going to be the most likable, down-to-earth, or grounded human. And the fact that we even get to explore that, and you have friends that snap her back to earth or call her out on it, is fantastic.
Now, being an actress, you've been working since you're young.
Yeah.
So you haven't had the same experience as Zoe. But do you still, I mean, obviously you feel connected to her because you've been playing her, but are you ever envious, or like you look at what her life is compared to what your life is, or any of that?
If anything, I think one, Zoe and I are polar opposites, so that really helps. But what I really do appreciate is that I don't know if many kids were given the space to literally go play in any context, but without consequences. And I feel like that's what acting is. And especially to play a character that pokes the bear all the time. If anything, it's just been this fun moment to explore pieces of myself that I don't think would ever naturally come out. I think whether that's her being envious, her being jealous, her being angry. I'm not one to be angry, not for any particular reason, but I just don't have much reason to be. So if anything, I appreciate the dual life. And it also means that I give great advice to friends, because I've lived double the life. I've been like, okay, tried Adderall, wasn't it? Also, I can attest to how great life not on Adderall is.
See? So, you can say, go watch season 3, episode whatever of Blackish.
Honestly.
Watch that and you'll get the answer.
When I tell you, when Blackish first started, I swore they were bugging our house, because I was like, these episodes are coming straight from our dinner, like dining room conversations.
And so what do you want to be doing? I mean, Grown-ish will be going for a while. You got this movie coming out.
It came out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen the posters. So I'm like, okay, I have to go see it.
It's been amazing to see the response to that, just in people who have been tagging me about their reactions to the movie. And that's been a really beautiful experience, especially because it's such a departure from what Grown-ish is.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you never want to do anything that replicates something you've already done. But I feel like the next step that we're already taking is into production. I mean, ultimately, the one thing my family's always said is that, like, we acting is something that we do, but not necessarily who we are. And it may sound really counterintuitive, especially because as soon as you act in one thing, you become an actor. But I really appreciate it, because it meant that my entire life, I've been pushed to follow literally every passion, dream, hobby of mine. And this idea of being able to help in the inception of stories is really exciting to me, particularly because it's not correlated to my telling them on screen, but if anything, we get to meet and be in relationship and in conversation with a whole new set of creatives, a whole new set of young voices, a whole new set of young actors. And so this has been a beautiful process, and we're in the process of 2 adaptations right now that we're excited to announce soon. So
exciting. Now, you've worked with a lot of really amazing people already. What's the number one person on your bucket list to work with? In your career sometime.
Oh, that's hard.
I know. Doesn't have to be number one, but one.
Okay, well, I think Angela Bassett. I would love to work, because they're a couple, does this count? Can I work with Courtney B. Vance and Angela Bassett?
Yeah.
Like in a Law and Order,
like
Black Panther
deal.
Hybrid type thing. They're both excellent humans that I love so dearly and who are incredible. And they're excellent actors, and so that would be incredible.
Let's make that happen.
Yes.
I'll see. We'll get in touch with their people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
It's good to talk to you.
That's a wrap on this episode of the TV Insider Podcast. As always, this podcast does not happen all by itself. So I want to send some thanks out to our awesome producer, Lori Perna, and editor, Sammy Junio, for taking care of all the back end of everything on the podcast. Find us on social media at TV Insider at both Twitter and Instagram, and let us know what you think of the podcast, and feel free to rate us on iTunes. Until our next episode, I'm Jim Halterman. Goodbye.